you'll find descriptions of real events and actual confessions of demonic encounters in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, Afraid, Demon Possession and Spiritual Warfare in America. It's written by Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Robert Bennett. Afraid is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. Afraid, Demon Possession and Spiritual Warfare in America.
That's how we secured the freedom in every state to marry the person we love. And they're out there, those voices. They don't get a lot of attention. They don't seek a lot of fanfare. But they're busy doing the work this country needs doing. It's the son who finds the courage to come out as who he is. And the father whose love for that son overrides everything he's been taught.
That's President Barack Obama commenting briefly about same-sex marriage and the kind of spirit of, well, he talked about voices that are doing the work that needs to be done in here in America during his final State of the Union address. Now, his statement about same-sex marriage was not confined to the text of his speech. There was something that was said without being said. Jim Obergefell, who was one of the plaintiffs in the Supreme Court decision this last year that gave us nationwide same-sex marriage, he was there at the president's invitation as well. What does that statement say? We're going to be talking about same-sex marriage, the remarks made by the president during his State of the Union address. Dr. Jennifer Oback Marsh will be our guest here in the first part of this hour of the Issues Etc. Greetings and welcome. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Thursday afternoon, the 14th of January. Carol Tobias of National Right to Life joins us after this. We're going to talk about the state of abortion in the U.S. Terry Mattingly will be our guest. We'll discuss media coverage of religion and the GOP division. Then Dr. Andrew Steinman is going to join us recently. Actually, not so recently, but there's a prevailing opinion among scholars about the date of the Old Testament Exodus, and then it also moves the other dates for other key events and their interpretation in the Old Testament around. I'm going to have Dr. Andrew Steinman respond to some of that, and then we'll round off today's Issues Etc. doing our series Christ in the Old Testament today, Zion's New Name in Isaiah 62. Joining us to discuss the same-sex marriage remarks during the president's State of the Union address, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, founding president of the Ruth Institute. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason universities, and she's author of several books, including her latest, The Sexual Revolution and Its Victims. Jennifer, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be back. Happy New Year, Todd.
And to you as well. What does it say? What was said by the president in that he invited Jim Obergefell, one of the plaintiffs in the Supreme Court same-sex marriage decision this last year, to be there personally at the State of the Union?
Well, he's trying to say, obviously, he's trying to treat Obergefell as a hero, as a Rosa Parks type of figure or something like that. I would have been more impressed if he could have invited the Goodriches, who set off Goodrich versus Massachusetts back in the day. That gave us the very first same-sex marriage case in the Union back in Massachusetts. But the Goodriches are no longer married to one another. And so it will be interesting to see whether Mr. Obergefell remains married to his true love there, that for whom we redefine marriage for the entire country.
The way that the president explicitly mentioned same-sex marriage, he used the language, we got kind of the nationwide freedom to marry the person we love. What does that mean?
Well, that's a very good question. What does that mean? You know, when you think about the phrase, love makes a family, that phrase actually sets my teeth on edge, because when the love fades, the family goes away. That's what it means. That's what it has meant since 1968 in the introduction of no-fault divorce. So we're bringing this project of marriage as the something that fulfills the desires of adults. We're bringing this project full circle. And so when he's talking about the freedom to marry the person you love, presumably if you no longer love that person, you can ditch that guy and go marry somebody else. That's what they're talking about. Of course, they never come out and say that that's what they're talking about, because then it would be obvious that what we're doing is telling the kids that they have to just accept whatever the adults choose to give them. But that's what is being said to us, Todd. Make no mistake about it.
No, you just framed the conversation here very carefully, and that is making marriage about fulfilling the desires of adults. Who's left out in that particular way of thinking about marriage?
Well, the children are left out. You know, I mean, what we've been saying all these years is that marriage is something that gives adults what they want, and that the whole society is organized around the principle that adults are entitled to the sex lives they want with a minimum of inconvenience. And that, in fact, it's the job of the government to minimize the inconvenience associated with you changing sex partners, or you having the sex partner you want, or you having the lifestyle that you want based on your sex lives. And what we've tacitly been saying is the kids just have to accept whatever the adults choose to give them, that there's no public purpose, that there's no public commitment, there's no private commitment to giving children what they absolutely need, which is a relationship and identity with both of their parents. And that's what's missing from the whole situation, is the children and whatever rights or entitlements children might have.
So that's the part that never gets stated or fully unfolded in all of this, and that is, and right now we're kind of living still in the honeymoon phase, where the fantasy is that these children may even be better off if their parents do whatever they want to. But never gets fully stated that children ought to have, if possible, a right to know and have a relationship with father and mother.
That's right. We gave that up when we gave up on lifelong marriage. You know, this was actually Jesus' idea back in the day, you know, back there in Matthew 19, when he made it clear that you have two choices, gentlemen. When the apostles whined at him about how it was too hard, you remember that? This is too hard, Jesus. It'd be better not to marry at all if this is the plan, that we can't get divorced. And then he starts talking about celibacy, lifelong celibacy. So Jesus' concept is that if you're married, you're supposed to stay married. You're married to one woman and one woman only. And that's your choice. You marry one woman and remain faithful to her, or you have a lifetime of celibacy. You guys just get over it. That's how it is. That's the new plan. And what he was doing for us was to allow the child to have a relationship with both of their parents, a permanent relationship with both parents. Because what's happened to us, Todd, is that people find their relationship with their new sex partner to be more important and more of a priority than their relationship with their child's other parent. That's what happens in same-sex marriages. That's what happens in divorce and remarriage situations. That's what happens in never-married parent situations quite often, okay? But obviously, if you're married to one person and you're faithful to that one person, you stay married for a lifetime to the same person, that conflict between your love for your child and your love for your child's other parent, that never comes up. You know, you never have to worry about any kind of conflict like that. And so we've been allowing a lot of these things to go under, you know, to go by unremarked. But in fact, we have a whole generation or more of people, children who are now adults, who are speaking for themselves and saying that this is not right. And I'm on the kids' side. I'm not on the side of the adults just doing what they feel like.
Returning a bit to the Supreme Court's decision, Obergefell, what did the court do? Did they even nod their heads, since we're reflecting upon it, toward the American electorate? What became of the will of the people in that decision?
Well, that's interesting. Not much. I mean, basically, the will of the people went out the window because we're all bigots and terrible people, and we're not allowed to vote this way, you know. And they've been that's the way they talk to us, is that our opinion simply doesn't count. And you could see that coming down the pike in the previous court decisions. You could see it coming at us based on how the federal judges dealt with the Proposition 8 case. The will of the people is not to be considered. What's striking about this whole thing is that the ordinary person, when given the chance to vote on this matter, has some understanding that children need both of their parents. And it's the elites of our culture, the judicial elites, the political elites, and certainly the business and financial elites, who couldn't give a rip whether children have an entitlement to be with their own parents, to even know who their parents are, because gay marriage moves the whole ball further down the pike. in the sense that not only is your relationship with your mom and dad interrupted, you never get to have a relationship with one of your parents at all if you're born through third-party reproduction, where the government helps the parents, helps the adults by falsifying the birth certificate, by creating a legal barrier between the child and one of their biological parents. The government is actively assisting adults in separating themselves from their children. It's appalling, really. And ordinary people have a sense that there's something wrong with this. And it's the elites who want to just keep going down this path.
I was a little disturbed, and I wonder what you think about it, Jennifer. I was a little disturbed at how broad the president's rhetoric was with regard to same-sex marriage, simply saying, marry the person we love. That's not just – that can be read. Obviously, it's not a legal statement, but that definition is so very, very broad.
Well, and you know, we've been talking about this all along. The principle that says that marrying a same-sex partner is a constitutional right is the very same principle that can be used for polygamy, incestuous relationships, and a lot of other things. And so when he used that rhetoric, he's setting himself up for that or trying to set all of us up for it, that those are the things that are coming down the pike next. And all of them have built into it the same thing that I've been talking about, which is a complete disregard for marriage as a permanent institution or marriage as something that has anything to do with children.
This is going to be President Obama's legacy in many ways. He's going to, whatever his legacy turns out to be, his legacy will be Obergefell, won't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I thought it was telling, too, the one other clip that you played where he talked about the courage required for a young guy to come out to his parents, completely omitting the fact that right now coming out does not require as much courage as is required by a person who says, you know, I feel same-sex attraction, but what I want to do is not act on it. What I want to do is live up to my church's teaching. What I want to do is walk away from the gay lifestyle that I've been living. That's what I want to do. Now, that person, that takes a lot of courage to talk like that in today's world. But Obama didn't mention any of those people, you know. And he talks about the father who loves his son more than anything, including whatever else he might have been taught, tacitly putting every adult in America, every Christian in America, every Lutheran, every Catholic, every serious Jewish person, at war between their religious beliefs and their love for their children. Well, our religion teaches that if you love somebody, you have to live in the truth with respect to them, and you have to help present them the truth. You're not doing people any favors by accommodating their desires, even if their desires are not necessarily good for them. So I recently wrote a column called 50 Shades of Gay, where I talked about this issue, that there are a lot of different ways that a person who experiences same-sex attraction can handle that and can relate to others and can behave and can have his priorities and so on. But Obama and his funders, his gay lobby funders, none of them want any of those 50 shades of gay to ever be seen. They only want a gay person who is doing exactly what we, the gay lobby, tell them to do, or a person who's in the closet and who's hopelessly lost and pathetic and sad and terrible. The idea that there are many possible ways to live and that you have a serious question, a whole series of serious questions to ask yourself about what's the right thing to do, that is all swept under the rug, you know. And so that will be part of Obama's legacy, this kind of lockstep concept that everybody has to do and be and feel the same thing. That's going to be part of his legacy, too.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of several books, including her latest, The Sexual Revolution and Its Victims. You'll find a link both to the Ruth Institute and to those resources on the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Jennifer, thanks for being our guest.
Thanks very much.
When we come back, we're going to talk with Carol Tobias, president of National Right to Life. After the State of the Union, maybe the state of abortion in the U.S. should be our subject, and that's what it will be. Then Terry Mattingly will join us to talk about a New York Times story that is trying to cover the division in the GOP without talking about religion. Stay tuned. Is the law the opposite of the gospel? I've written an article in the latest issues, etc. journal titled, Is the Law Bad? Some Myths About God's Law. You can read it by subscribing to the online Issues, etc. journal. Just click the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. You can also read about Tim Wood's journey from many different Christian confessions to the sound and seamless theology of the Lutheran Confession, the free online Issues Etc. journal.
Even if your child has mild to moderate autism, learning disabilities, attention difficulties, or other learning challenges, he can receive a classical Christian education. The Simply Classical curriculum was created by Issues Etc. guest Cheryl Swope, an author, educator with a master's degree in special education, and homeschooling mother of twins with special needs. The Simply Classical curriculum has become an answer to prayer for parents and schools. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and save $5 with the coupon code LPR.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you ever wanted to better understand philosophy and its impact on today's culture, but didn't know where to begin? Have you struggled to find a biblical approach to the topic? Well, Concordia University, Wisconsin has an exciting, free online course entitled Catechristen. It's taught by noted Lutheran philosopher, Dr. Gregory Schultz. Find out more about this free online course for professional church workers and lay people by clicking the Catechristen logo at issuesetc.org.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+, simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.